Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gunnar Zindberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I never invite anyone onto the show unless I'm interested in and thrilled by their work. Mary Ruffel, our guest today, is someone, you'll pardon me if this is in any way intrusive, but Mary Ruffel is my heart's darling. She really is. I was privileged to see the manuscript of her new book, Dunce, which is published by Wave Books. We're going to begin with the title poem by my guest, Mary Ruffel.
Dunce. I am always up for a bog, said Mary. I, too, am always up for one, said I. And so we put on our rubber boots. I love being in rubber boots, said Mary. And I said the same. The ground sprang as we bogged, the bog wavered as we sprang. Orchids and mushrooms and orchids, slender and pink, squat and brown. And as the light fell, the eyes of the fireflies were all around, like tinker ghosts. There is in my house, she said, a stove light that never goes off. And in my car, I said, there's a dash light that never goes off. What warning has no end and ends without warning? She thought I didn't know.
Dunce by Mary Ruffel. Now, can you tell me, these poems are not themselves dunce-like, but they use what, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call the techniques of Dunstan.
Yes, they do. Several of them rhyme, which is something I've never done before and really got into. I think, I don't know if it's becoming a child again in old age. I've always have, because, you know, predictable, boring reasons, and my father would call me a dunce, you know. But I used to be ashamed of it, or it would bother me. And now I just accept it. It's who I am. It's great, you know. Dunstum, my own duncehood. We're all complicit. You know, we're all dunces in a way. But then many of the poems, I hope, deal with the larger issues of the true duncehood of our nation and things like that. I'm thinking in particular of a poem about extinction. Should I read that one?
Please.
Vow of Extinction. From this day forward, all plants, except the lemon tree, will be banished from my poems. From this day forward, I am wedded to the sky. All clouds shall be banished, and my memory of them vanish like memory itself. Not even a lime shall sneak in. Animals shall exit my poems, including those that cross the sky in herds or as stragglers. Without plants, without animals, people cannot survive in my poems, so they too shall be sent, those with shoes and those without, in a long line leaving. Leaving myself under the lemon tree wedded to the sky that is light, then dark, then light. Candles are forbidden. I will feel the terrible weight of twilight as it falls over the land like a despondent minx, words I might formerly have used for a squirrel. From this cretinous proposition, I shall write my poems and try to reach those who no longer exist. They are not in this poem or any other. From this day forward, I eat lemons in my park. Their complete similarity to me can now be distinguished. To speak of my promise, my offering to the sky, puts a sprig in my mouth. Would this not then be my entry into society?
They're so interesting, because the easy way out would be to write dunce poems. You're not making fun of poetry.
No.
You're not making fun of dunces. You're creating an intersection where dunces write poetry, and it has for them the joy and revelation.
Yes,
it's fantastic. Yes. There's one of my favorites here. It's called
Tuna and a Play.
Tuna and a Play, and it's like a song.
Yes, I know that one. Tuna and a Play. Tonight, we are having tuna and a play. Earlier, I picked grasses with Jay. Bluegrass, pink grass, silver grass. We each carried a bouquet. I asked Jay if she was glad to be human. Jay, are you glad to be a human? But she couldn't say. She walked through the grasses for what seemed like a day. I thought I saw her face turn gray, but it was no more than a moment in a very nice day. And tonight, we are having tuna and a play.
I can't tell you, I don't know why, but it reminds me when, as a child, my parents would tell me that we were going to a movie or a play after dinner, after salmon croquettes, say. And it was, you know, such a circumstance of unaccountable joy, because, you know, can I expose my dunce part?
Yes.
This is so...
By all means, Michael.
This is so peculiar. My parents, who were not theater goers, they just were not, had been given tickets when it first opened to The Sound of Music on Broadway when Mary Martin was in it. And my uncle was too sick to go. So after extracting from me promises that I'd be very, very well behaved, they took me. And when we got to the play, during the first act, I was terrified because I was so shy and I'd never been in a theater before. But any time there were children around, my parents wanted me to play with them. And I was afraid I was going to have to go on the stage and play with these children. And I didn't know the words to the songs they were singing. I was so scared until after intermission. But after intermission, it was pure joy. And guess what, Mary?
What?
They bought me a comic book on the way home. And not a 12-cent comic book, but what they used to call a giant. It cost a full quarter.
Oh.
And it was one of the Casper series. I didn't like superheroes. I liked characters that were like children like me.
Like Casper the Friendly Ghost?
Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I liked Mighty Mouse.
Mighty Mouse.
I loved Mighty Mouse, and I loved Casper the Friendly Ghost.
And even though this is not about children, let's hear Tuna and a Play one more time.
Yeah. I want to read it again, but something you said made me think about childhood. Also, when you're a child, oftentimes you will sense in your bones a moment of grief or sadness or confusion passing briefly through the face of one of your parents or an adult. And it has an effect on you even though you don't understand it and you're simply subliminally picking up on someone else's grief. And there is that moment in here where it's just a passing moment where larger concerns come in. Anyway, it's called Tuna and a Play. Tonight, we are having tuna and a play. Earlier, I picked grasses with Jay. Bluegrass, pink grass, silver grass. We each carried a bouquet. I asked Jay if she was glad to be human. Jay, are you glad to be a human? But she couldn't say. She walked through the grasses for what seemed like a day. I thought I saw her face turn gray, but it was no more than a moment in a very nice day. And tonight, we are having tuna and a play.
See, that whole impulse to ask, are you glad to be human? And to ask someone who really has to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then a silence takes over. And there they've been, with bluegrass and pink grass and silver grass. That feels like fairy grasses.
But there's also this great excitement that tonight we are having tuna and a play.
Absolutely. Let's hear another.
Yeah.
My mother, who died this past year, was named Lorraine.
It's my middle name.
Oh, wow.
My middle name.
There's a poem here called Lorraine.
Called Lorraine. I'll read that. Lorraine. Once I had a plum tree. It was small but sturdy, and every April I threw its petals into the stream. They intoxicated everyone, even the postman. Even the postman knows I am more homesick than E.T. and lonelier than my middle name. I live with mice and bats where once I had toy cars and paper airplanes. Like a wild swan with a blue shadow, I no longer care what I say. You no longer exist. I try to remember my dream, but as soon as I turn on the shower, it's gone.
Oh, Mary, you've gone to the place, you know, like, what would you say? Two doors before poetry. Mice and bats.
Mice and bats, where once I had toy cars and paper airplanes. Well, I do live with mice and bats. I mean, since I live in the country of Vermont, I'm familiar with mice and bats, as you must be familiar with certain other kinds of animals here in L.A., insects.
Yes. Mosquitoes have come back to L.A.
I've always lived where there are mosquitoes, and I am one of those people, you know, an insect within a five-mile radius will find me. You know, is this global warming, climate change that sent mosquitoes are coming into this area?
Yes.
Oh, it's so frightening. It's so frightening. It's so frightening.
Now, are these poems escapes into the dunce state because it is so frightening?
No, I wouldn't say that, because I'm very playful in many of them. I think it's escape into old age, and literally, to quote a line from the poem I just read, I no longer care what I say. The older I get, the less self-conscious I am about trying to please anyone but myself and my own sense of imagination, and I no longer care what I say. There are no authority figures. This happens in life. And there's great freedom in aging. There's great freedom in aging when you can finally be true to yourself.
Yes. Yeah, and when you know what being true to yourself is.
Yes. Yes.
That's a real reward. After so much uncertainty.
True.
Of people telling you, you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't say that under any circumstances. Oh, yes,
yeah, you
should.
Can't do that in a poem. You can't say that.
Yes.
I found this out last night. It is now considered politically incorrect to ask someone where they're from.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh.
And if you teach at a university, you have to, you take, you know, sexual harassment tests, which is, that's good, but there's lots of other questions that have been added, and that's one. You cannot ask people where they're from, your students, because asking where someone is from implies that they are an other, and you are acknowledging that you see them as unlike yourself, which may be offensive to them. Now, this is gone amok. I'm on public air. This has gone amok, because what it also means is we increasingly live as beings in the ether, not on earth. You used to dial a phone number and you were calling a place. You knew where the person was. Now you're not calling a place, you're calling a person who could be anywhere. And when you email, you can email someone for years and never know where they live. So this idea of it's wrong to know where someone's from or where they are, it puts us all in the ether, like we're disembodied in some strange way.
Very well said. Let's hear another poem.
Let's see. How we met. I very much dislike being at a buffet. The first time I saw that the little man in the radish swing, swinging out over the vegetable tray, was himself a radish, I was happy. I would be happiest if there were a whole village of radish people, as many radish people as there are buffet people. I hope for each radish person a sister person in the room. I am half radish myself. Some say the best thing you can do is carry a pair of little scissors, snip small pieces of the world, and take them home with you. These scissors have cut hair. These scissors have cut nails. From these scissors come my fragments. You can cut a rose from a radish, or little people who are happy swinging in a room of bigger people, the excited throng cut from cloth. At the banquet, I stood next to him. When I pushed the swing, he smiled at me. Fast friends are the best. It is good to have a bunch of them. We each chose a piece of preposterous melon, and for the sake of a little quiet, removed the seeds. You see? From radishes come joy.
Oh, Mary, they're so beautiful.
Little radish people.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. Mary Ruffel's new book is Dunce. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mary Ruffel about her book, Dunce. You know, at first I thought it was a commentary on the stupidity of our times, but it turns out to be that even if it's given its freedom to play, stupidity, dunstum, is beautiful too, as long as you stop judging it, as long as you stop calling people names and sending them to the corner to be the dunce. A lot of people in workshops, mm-hmm. write poems that have no meanings. And as you say in this book, in fact, that you think that meaning is everywhere, that you can't stop meaning, that meaning is our river of life. And I wondered how you can help young poets who feel triumphant at having escaped from meaning to come back.
I think that often there's a confusion between meaning and experience, the way there is also a confusion between meaning and significance. And poems don't necessarily have to have meaning because they can't be paraphrased, but that doesn't mean they're not significant, that they have significance. And I think many young writers, they throw out the baby with the bathwater, as the cliche goes. When they throw out meaning, they throw out experience. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, did you yourself in school ever have to stand in the corner?
No, I was put on a chair in the hallway.
Oh, okay, same thing, yeah.
And I was so lonely. It was elementary school, and it was my favorite teacher who sent me out there. And I had never been punished by that teacher. And I was sitting on that chair, Mary, with tears streaming down my face.
Oh, of course, of course. I spent many an afternoon in the corner. It was always in the corner where the walls met. It was punishment. I would misbehave in class, I imagine. And I have strong memories of just standing and staring at the corner. And so we were being punished. We were being called dunces when we weren't, you know, and we were being punished for what? For being ourselves. And there is a connection here. Maybe I'm forcing it too much, but many young writers who have neither meaning nor experience, they feel if they put meaning in their work or experience, that they'll be punished for being themselves.
Exactly.
By who? By what? What is the authority figure out there that they feel they have to listen to?
Well, Mary, I found myself talking to a friend poet who I almost consider to be my son. Mm-hmm. And he's not related to me. And I said, you're so afraid of confessional poetry. But what do you think that your beloved Jimmy Schuyler writes? He writes so many love poems and love and disappointment poems. He is writing the poetry that everyone says is unacceptable now, poetry that comes straight from the wounded heart.
He writes from his experience from the moment he gets up. Those poems are, I'm a huge fan.
Me too.
A huge fan of James Schuyler, and he can write a poem about brushing his teeth and you'll be weeping.
Yeah, no. And there's a poem that ends, "They were not my lovers, though. You were. You said so." And you just go, oh my. Oh my. Yeah, let's read the last poem in this book.
Of course. The Leaves. Yeah. The Leaves. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here together today to look into the face of the river. One of us has stayed at home to rake the leaves, gathering those poor tears shed for the rest of us. If there is one among you who sees in the face of the river your own, please step forward and identify the source of your wealth. If not, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of the important philosophers in golden Greece? An old cedar stood by, simply thankful she existed. And a young fox, who had neither dreams nor feelings in this French. And the one at a distance, raking the leaves, did not think of them as tears, but as simple toil, conducted without compromise. In the sweet, fresh morning, how good it was to be alone with potato parings filling his mind. To whom should he speak? There was no one but the leaves, and the leaves did not feel he had anything worth saying.
Mary Ruffel, reading the last poem in her book, Dunce. Now, I want to point out that after the book ends formally with the usual acknowledgments of where the poems have previously appeared and that this poem quotes this artist and that poem is dedicated to this person. This commemorates a true meeting in memory of Thomas Solomon. We get on the very last page a haiku. Would you read it?
Now take this flea. He simply cannot jump, and I love him for it. Issa, my favorite poet in the world. I never, ever used to be able to answer the dreaded question, who's your favorite poet? And poets hate that question, but I now, when I'm asked it, I now have an answer. I just tell them Issa, because I love Issa.
Issa is a haiku poet. And when did he live? Do you know? Can you say?
18th century. Oh.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but that's my guess. You see, I hope I'm wrong because it would prove I'm a dunce.
Well, what's lovely is, you know, a flea that cannot jump, well, can't be in a flea circus,
yeah.
You know, but he can be loved. Like everything else can, whether they're gifted with the gifts they're supposed to have or bereft.
Mm-hmm.
They can all be loved. Now take this flea. He simply cannot jump, and I love him for it. You know, that's like the essence, the concentration of all these poems, all these dunces who bring to us the special affair of having a gift that can't be used.
What can you do with it?
Yeah. I have to say, I just love it as much as I love the last book. I've been talking to Mary Ruffel, author of Dunce, published by Wave Books. Thank you, Mary, for coming to us.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Bookworm. Thank you, Los Angeles. It's been a great pleasure.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It's so easy. You can listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. Special flash, Issa lived from 1763 to 1828.
I got it.
You got
it.
You did. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Kathleen Shine is our guest. I think that's a wonderful interview, one that's only possible thanks to the support of our listeners. If you've discovered an author on Bookworm, or found a challenging narrative you love, or rekindled a lost love for one of the books we've featured, please support it. The revolutionary UnDrive means no lost programming. You make it possible. Join now by going to kcrw.com/join.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.